You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 235, entitled How to Become Funnier, Master Your Social Skills, and Thrive in Any Social Setting, I chat with Andrew Tarvin. Andrew Tarvin is a humor engineer, TEDx speaker, and best-selling author, and in today's episode, Andrew talks about how he's been able to develop and teach the crucial and elusive skill of being funny. He shares the secret recipe for making others laugh, improving your communication and social skills, and developing the confidence needed to thrive in any social setting. Andrew also covers leadership, workplace humor, thinking on your toes, the art of socializing, and influence. If you're wondering how to master the mysterious art of comedy, become naturally funnier and dominate any social setting, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. If you want to get more content, more information, and extra bonuses I don't post anywhere else, make sure you follow me on Instagram right now. It's at Justin Stenstrom. That's JustinStenstrom. I'm posting pretty much every day throughout the week, most days out of the week for sure, but almost every day. And it's all kinds of information regarding health, wealth, business, life, dating, relationships, confidence, and so much more. I'm telling you, you're going to love seeing some of the stories I post about and the feed posts I post all the time. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty fun. I'm loving Instagram right now, so make sure you follow me, Instagram.com/Justin Stenstrom, or just jump on your phone right now, pull up the Instagram app, and it's at Justin Stenstrom. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Andrew Tarvin from HumorThatWorks.com. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Andrew, can you take a minute just to describe exactly what you do right now? Because I just told you a moment ago before we jumped on, I love what you're up to. I love the topic that we're going to cover today. But for the audience who may not be as familiar with your name or sort of your background, just take a minute and describe what it is you're doing.
Sure. So the sentence version of it is I teach people how to be funnier so that they can be effectiver. And so that mix is basically this idea of how do we use humor specifically kind of in the workplace and in our own lives to get better results. And this kind of comes from a combination of my background. So I've spent, you know, the last 10 years doing improv and stand-up comedy. I've done over 1,000 shows and I've spoken and performed in all 50 states and in 25 countries around the world. But prior to that, and more so, I've always been an engineer, and I, you know, got a degree in computer science and engineering and spent 6 years as a project manager at Procter & Gamble. And so what I discovered at P&G was the success that I had there and since then was partially because of the technical skills that I had, but even more so because of the human skills that I had learned from improv and stand-up. And so started to explore that intersection of, you know, humor in the workplace, improv in business, happiness and productivity, and realized that this was something that I could help other people with as well. And so that's what, that's what we do with Humor That Works now, is work with organizations and people on how to get better results and have more fun.
That is awesome, man. It sounds like such a good mix of the backgrounds of like two different minds, like the analytical mind and also the creative mind, and the combination of the two is really what sounds like led to your success. Did you always have that comedy bone in you from like a young age where you were always telling jokes and making people laugh, or is that something you developed after doing 10 years of stand-up comedy and improv?
Yeah, it's definitely something that was developed. You know, I would make kind of bad jokes as a kid, as many ones were wont to do, but I'm very much an introvert, right? If you know your personality assessments, I am a type A blue square conscientious INTJ with the sign of Aquarius, right? So that means that I am a stubborn, ambitious introvert who likes long walks on the beach by myself, right? And in fact, when I went to my high school reunion a few years ago and my old high school classmates found out that I did comedy, they're like, but you're not funny, right? Because, you know, I was the one growing up. I was not the life of the party or the class clown. My senior year, I was voted teacher's pet. So it was very much something that I came to a little bit later in life in college. And, you know, as I was going through improv and as I was going through stand-up and then later at P&G, it was like, oh, all these things that I'm learning about, say, improv, of, you know, listening more effectively, being present in the moment, building off of people's ideas, and then what I was learning in comedy of in stand-up of how to make people laugh, those two things combined, I started to see much better results at work when I started to incorporate those. So that kind of built my love, because as an engineer, I love doing what works, and humor was the easiest way to work with the hardest resource I ever had to work with, which was other humans.
Yeah, I find it personally fascinating, too, that you dove into stand-up and improv. I didn't do the stand-up part of things, but I also dove into a little bit of improv. I took dance classes, acting classes, and classes like that many years ago that pushed me out of my comfort zone because I wanted to get better specifically with women, but socially in general. I wanted to be a better communicator with other people and have more confidence when I did that. And these things were some of the biggest factors for me being able to dramatically change my life and actually get good in those areas. What was the reason, Andrew, that you dove into stand up yourself?
Well, for me, it was, you know, kind of less intentional. I was basically, so I was at the Ohio State University getting a degree in computer science and engineering, and my best friend wanted to start an improv comedy group, and he needed people and basically forced me to join. And we were terrible at first. We had no idea what we were doing. We watched Whose Line Is It Anyway and tried to repeat what we saw. And so, you know, what I didn't have in comedy skill, I was like, all right, I'll make up for in comedy project management. I was like, all right, I'm going to be the one that if we're going to do this, we're going to practice 3 times a week. We're going to, you know, film all of our shows and go back and watch them. We're going to have a business meeting every Monday to see how we can kind of grow the group, and fell in love with it from there. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm really passionate about what it is that I do, is that I was never one of those people that was like sitting in an audience being like, you know what, I think I could do that. I'm going to sign up for a class, or I'm going to try an open mic. But rather, I was kind of pushed into it. And so I feel fortunate that with a lot of the groups that we work with, you know, it's a manager or a leader hiring us, and the people showing up are like, we didn't hire you. What's this going to be about? And so I'm introducing it to people that didn't necessarily raise their hand to say, I'm going to be funny and I can do this, but more of people who are like, oh, now that I see that it is a skill that can be learned, now that I can see that it can help me get the types of results that I'm looking for, whether that is more confidence, whether it is improving communication skills, whether it is just enjoying your work a little bit more, you know, whatever it happens to be, it has this, you know, kind of this light bulb moment for them. And I think kind of to your point, improv can do that. One of the things that I love, and the reason why we use a lot of improv in our trainings, is that it's a great way to practice some of these skills. It's one thing to say, hey, to be an effective communicator, to, you know, have confidence. But how do you practice confidence, right? And so improv is a way to practice some of those things in a way that is in a safe environment and is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Why do you think humor is a skill that can be learned by anyone and not just something that funny people or people that are, you know, genetically have that gene in them, like Robin Williams or Eddie Murphy, these incredible stand-up comedians that were just funny when they were pushed out of the womb? Why do you think it's a skill that anybody can develop and not just a few certain people?
Well, I think it's funny because you look at and you talk with comedians sometimes and they think, no, you kind of have to be born with things. And certainly like any skill, it's like, you know, you can learn piano and get much better, but there's going to be certain things that may hold you back. Or same thing with, you know, basketball. Like you can be, you know, work every single day and work really, really hard. But if you're born, you know, 5 foot even and 100 pounds, you're probably not going to make the NBA. And so same thing with humor is you can learn a lot and practice it. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a Netflix comedy special, but you can get better. And so it's funny because sometimes these known comedians are like, no, it's kind of an innate thing. And then they go and they, you know, spend hours upon hours perfecting jokes and working on it. If it was a truly innate ability, you'd have a lot more comedians like Sinbad, who is a lot more improvisational. Instead of these comedians that are talking about how often they put in time for the work. And so I think, one, the amount of work that goes into it for even some of the best kind of hints that, no, there's a skill piece to it. And I think there's absolutely an art and science to humor. So we can teach some of the science things. We can tell you what a comic triple is and understand how content works and how you know, for structure of put the punchline at the end and set up and punchline works as a joke. And then there's an art to it, and you can practice that art, and it's not immediate. It takes time. You know, comedians will say it can take 7 to 10 years to kind of identify your stage persona. But all of that kind of removes from the idea of, if you want to use it in the workplace, you don't have to become a stand-up comedian. We can learn from the professionals, but you don't have to learn it. There's a lot lower barrier, a lot smaller bar to entry to effectively using humor in the workplace. And that's what we focus on is, again, less about learning how to be really funny for the stand-up stage and more about how do we use humor as a tool to get results.
What do you think actually goes into making people funny? Like, what is the factor or some of the secret sauce that some people have, not even just stand-up comedians, but just regular funny dudes that you and I know, funny, interesting people that we want to be around, that light up the room, that make us laugh, that make us smile? What are some of the components that these people have and that they use to actually be that funny person?
Yeah, well, the thing that I kind of think about it is, so if you look at least the way that we think about the skill of humor, it kind of breaks down into three components. The first component is a sense of humor. This is a, you know, what do you find funny? What do you find interesting? What are you curious about? Because I don't think that funny things happen to funny people. I think funny people see the world in a funny way. And so it's, you know, the starting point for any comedy is looking around the world and going like, huh, that's interesting. And that, huh, that's interesting creates your perspective, your persona, and that's the starting point. And then from there, you can build into, you know, the ability to humor. And the ability to humor is kind of a mix of both content and delivery. So do you have good writing? Do you have good kind of like written structure or good, interesting ideas? And then delivery is huge. A lot of the people that tend to be quote unquote naturally funny, they tend to have they tend to be pretty good on the delivery side of things. They can just say something in a certain way, or the way that they pause, or the way that they do an act out is very funny. So the, you know, kind of quintessential example of this is Dane Cook. If you look at some of Dane Cook's material, it's not funny on paper, but then you go and see him perform and he brings that material to life. So that ability to humor is key. And some of that comes from improvisation, you know. So from improv class, I'm sure you probably remember yes and is a mindset. And yes and is about how do you build ideas and how do you generate things. And it has a lot of different applications outside of comedy, but it's a great way to generate ideas. So as an example of this, and this is one of the examples that I share in my TEDx talk, is that it took me going to the state of Florida to realize that the rapper Flo Rida got his name from his home state of Florida, and he put a space in it. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that blew my mind. I don't know if you already knew that. I don't know if the listeners already knew that. I did not know that. It like blew my mind that it was like Flo Rida spelled Florida. So that's the observation. That's the thing that was like, huh, that's interesting. So then you can say, okay, if this is true, what else is true? The ability to humor to generate ideas then comes from, you could say, okay, like, all right, so if he has a hidden message about where he's from and his name, you know, who else has a hidden message? Is like, what is Bruno Mars really trying to say, right? Kind of as a joke. Or you can take it in the other direction. You can say, okay, if someone got their brand name from where they're from and put a space in it, what if other people did that, right? If this is true, what else is true? So, you know, there could be a Hispanic travel agency in Dover that goes by De La Wear, right? Or there could be a female internet detective who's married in Biloxi that goes by Mrs. IPPI, right? And so that's just a logical extension of if this is true, what else is true? So that's part of the ability to humor. And then the final component of the skill of humor that we talk about is the agency with humor. And this is the ability to use humor for a specific goal, right? This is the ability to use humor in a conversation to build rapport with people and kind of have a good time. Or this is how to use humor as a way to get people to pay attention to a message. Or this is just humor as a way to kind of relieve stress from, you know, you get out of a stressful meeting or a date doesn't go well or whatever, right? To be able to relieve some stress. And that is kind of centered around what we call a humor map. But the interesting thing about the sense of humor and the agency with humor is that to get started, you don't even always have to be the creator of humor. Instead, you can be the shepherd of humor. You can share things out. So if you want to start with humor, maybe it's not about, you know, coming up with all these natural jokes yourself, but maybe it starts with sharing more. Because I do believe that as you kind of intake more comedy, as you start to notice it and observe it a little bit more, you start to improve your own skill with it. And so you can share, you know, this is what you see with people sharing memes on the internet. It's like they don't have to create it, but they can share it with someone else. And then maybe over time, they start to generate some of their own ideas. And so I think borrowing, not, you know, blatantly stealing things, giving people credit where credit is due, but using that as a starting point can be a great way to get started in the idea of using humor.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a great way to share that you have a sense of humor without actually knowing how to come up with your own jokes or making ways to make people laugh on your own. But it goes to the first part of the component, which is showing that you have a sense of humor.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a big component of what we miss in the workplace. You know, one of the things that we'll say, and I'm sure it's true of your listeners, so we'll kind of share it here as well, is that I'm sure that, you know, of your listeners, many of them, probably most of them, are likable people at home, right? And then they go into the workplace, or then they go to a networking event and something changes, and they have to feel like they have to put on a work face, that they have to become a shell of a human. And we're realizing that, you know, work is no longer like that. Maybe that made sense in the Industrial Revolution, but in today's world where there is no real work-life balance, where it's more about work-life integration and recognizing that our emotions impact our ability to get things done, humor becomes even more heightened, more important in terms of what we do.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely applicable to times of being around, say, a boss or a superior or something like a professional meeting or an interview where you don't know how to use humor, you don't know how to be funny, or like you said, you don't really know how to be yourself or be your best self. Like when you're at home or you're around a bunch of your good friends, you're at your very best. People think you're funny, people think you're cool, people think you're the man, but you don't know how to translate that attitude that you have into these different situations. So what do you recommend, Andrew, for these types of people?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where the humor map comes into play. And so the map is, you know, just an acronym for medium, audience, and purpose. So if you're thinking about executing humor in a more deliberate way, one, what is your audience or your medium? Like, is it going to be in an email? Is it in a phone call? Is it in a conversation one-on-one with someone? Because, you know, your medium impacts your message. A joke that you would make with, you know, someone in person is very different than how it might come across via text, right? This is completely true in like the dating scene of like, if you send something that you think is playful, but the other person doesn't know your sense of humor yet, they're like, oh my God, this person is such a jerk. And like, why would they say that? You meant it as kind of a playful thing, right? The text, because they don't have the additional kind of body language and paralanguage to it, comes across in a different way. So your medium for sure impacts your message. Second thing to know is your audience, and this is what is your relationship to that person. You know, someone that you've known for a long time is very, you know, a joke that you might make with them is very different than what you might make with a client that you're meeting for the first time, or like you said, in an interview. Because like, I don't know if you have a friend group like me, but I have a group of friends from college where we were constantly bantering back and forth, and it was constantly kind of poking fun at each other to the point that if we didn't make fun of you, it meant that we didn't like you or that we weren't comfortable with you.
Yeah.
Right. And so that makes sense if it's a group of people that have known each other for a long time, but you can't translate that same humor in the first time you go into an interview and start immediately like bantering with the other person, kind of poking fun of them because they're like, whoa, this dude is like too aggressive. So your audience and your relationship with the audience is important. And also along with that, the other thing is to recognize that using humor doesn't replace the work or the actual message or the things that you would normally do otherwise. So you want to make sure that you know what the audience needs and what they expect so that you can deliver what they need in a way that they don't expect, right? So that they still get kind of what they need out of that interaction, whether that is getting to know you more as a person because it's a date or an interview, or, you know, if it's going into a meeting, learning more about the product that you're sharing information about, if it's, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then the final component is your purpose. What is, you know, why do you want to use humor? Because humor just for the sake of humor is fine, but humor is incredibly valuable that we can use it to achieve specific results. So you can say, oh, I want to use humor in an email so that people actually open the email and read it. Or I want to use humor as a way to help people remember things a little bit longer. Oh, I want to use humor just so I stand out at this networking event so that people kind of remember the conversation that we had after it's over. Maybe you just want to use humor as a way to relieve stress because it's been a tough day or a tough situation. You know, whatever that happens to be, it's probably going to be a different type of humor depending on what you're looking for. So when you start with that and think a little bit more deliberately about it, you can then start to find different tools or techniques within comedy to achieve those goals.
If you are not on the Elite Man newsletter yet, make sure you get on it right now. Go to EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter and sign yourself up today. Get all of our bonus podcast information, sneak peeks into upcoming shows, behind-the-scenes content, special offers, and exclusive Elite Man updates found absolutely nowhere else. You are basically getting a sneak peek into all Elite Man content, activity, and updates and news. You will be the first person notified when anything Elite Man related happens. I'm telling you, it's basically like getting a sneak peek into Elite Man headquarters. Go to EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter, sign yourself up, and become a true member of the Elite Man community. I look forward to speaking to you soon. EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter. So I guess you make a ton of great points right there too, but on the last point that you made, how do you know when to use the humor, when to dial it back, when to not use it, and how to actually go about traversing this whole type of concept in different conversations? Because like you said, there's so many different settings, so many different audiences that you're going to be in front of, even different mediums nowadays with things like texting and talking in person and email and Skype. And there's just so many different, ways to communicate. How do you know what to bring up at what different times?
Well, I think that part of it is, you know, I'll give a couple of guidelines, but in general, it's going to be an iterative approach. It's always going to be testing, right? It's going to be, if you're in the dating scene and it's like, okay, what messages do I use on apps or when first meeting someone or whatever? It's an iterative approach. See what works, see what gets people laughing, see what other people are doing and seems to be effective. Same thing with even your meetings is, you know, see what kind of things people are responding to and evolve over time. Like if you're going to a networking event, you know that you're going to answer the question of what do you do probably 8 million times. And so tweak it each time and see where people laugh. And then, okay, if someone laughs, keep that. And then next time try a little bit more and do something else. Like it's very much a testing thing. And I think that's why as an engineer, I like it. It's kind of like programming in a way, or it's almost math with words. So there is a fun kind of discovery part of it. I would say in general to kind of know, I mean, that's part of what we're trying to do with Humor That Works is give some of that guidance. So from an appropriate scale, one of the easiest things to keep in mind, particularly for the workplace, is to think of the newspaper rule. And the newspaper rule is simply, would you want whatever it is that you said or did showing up in the front page of your hometown newspaper for your coworkers to read or your boss to read or your mom to read, your parakeet to read? And if you're like, I don't know if I'd want the entire world to see that I made this particular joke, then probably not appropriate for the workplace, right? And so that's just kind of the starting point. Because when it comes to using humor specifically at work, the goal is not to be the funny person, right? Again, it's about being more effective. And so you're going to use some more positive, more inclusive forms of humor to be able to do that. And then when it comes to specific strategies, the book is kind of centered around 5 skills. So it's kind of our belief that no matter who you are, what you do, work comes down to 5 things. Right? You have to be able to execute. You have to be able to, you know, send emails or fry the French fries or shave an alpaca, like whatever your job happens to be. You have to be able to execute the tasks. You have to be able to think, right, strategically, to solve problems, to think critically and creatively. You have to be able to communicate. You have to what Thomas Harrell says calls verbal fluency, the ability to articulate the intelligence that you have, both like sending and receiving of information. You have to be able to connect with people, right? Build rapport, understand empathy and emotional intelligence. And then finally, you have to be able to lead. You have to be able to influence people towards some type of goal or action. And so no matter who you are, what you do, it's some component of those 5 things. And so we're saying that humor is the missing skill. It's the way that you do each of those 5 things that will help you get better results. And so the book is centered around 10 strategies, 2 strategies for each one of those skills. So for example, the easiest place to start is in execution. And this can apply to tasks that you have to do for work or even in your personal life is, you know, the first strategy is just find ways to play your work. Find ways to add gamification to make it a little bit more fun, right? If you have to go through emails, one of the things that I do is when I'm batch processing emails, if I start to get bored, I start to read each of the emails in a different accent in my head, right? Well, it sounded like this person sent me that it was British, right? And that's just something simple to keep myself a little bit more engaged. Or you can do things where it's like, oh man, I gotta, like, I'm gonna go through, you know, if you're in the dating scene and you're doing apps and you're like, I'm gonna, you know, start to send some messages out, do it with a couple of friends and share, you know, share over a drink or some food or something as each person is doing it, right? Find someone else that you can do the process with to make it a little bit more fun. Just small things that you can choose to make the work a little bit more fun means you're gonna increase your willingness to do it and also how long you're probably willing to do it.
Yeah. Is there any other things? You mentioned a couple.
Yeah, for sure. So then also with an execution, I would say a big one is being able to relieve stress, just being conscious about it. Because, you know, what you've learned from working out, and I'm sure from some of the classes and things that you took as well, is that, you know, stress is not a bad thing. Stress by itself is not inherently bad. In fact, it's a good thing. It's how we grow, right? When we're working out, we're stressing our muscles. We're breaking the muscle fibers down so that they get stronger. But as we know from athletes and working out, the muscles grow not when we're working out, but when we're resting, when we give them fuel, when we give them rest. And our human capacity to get work done or to do things is the same way. And so stress, again, isn't bad, but chronic stress is. Chronic stress without relieving the stress leads to an increase in blood pressure, an increase in muscle tension, a decrease in the immune system, all these negative physiological effects. So we can use humor to counteract them. We can strategically throughout the day find times to take a break to be more energized, to be recharged. And you know, kind of as a joke, you know, I say that as an engineer, I have been obsessed with efficiency ever since I can remember, right? Even really since before I can remember, because I was born 3 weeks early. Right. So even since the womb, I've been trying to find ways to do things as productively as possible. And one of the things that I've discovered is that it is very difficult to be productive if you are dead. Right. Or even if you feel like death. Right. If you're sick, if you're tired, if you're burned out, stressed out, worn out, very difficult to show up and be fully present, to be fully engaged in your work. And so we can use humor to strategically, you know, disengage or to strategically renew. For example, you know, as I mentioned, I'm an introvert. So like when I speak, I love speaking and I love talking with people. I love doing the trainings. I love podcasts. But when I'm done, I'm very happy when I don't have to see any other humans. Right? I need to schedule time to have a little bit of a break, to recharge, to go on Reddit for a few minutes or to watch a couple funny videos on YouTube or whatever it happens to be. And so we can be strategic about planning those times for recharge. We can strategically kind of have those breaks in the day, or we can strategically listen to, you know, a podcast, or like schedule, hey, I'm going to listen to this podcast on my way home from work because it gives me some unique ideas. It's kind of fun. And now I'm going to relieve some stress before I get home and have to show up in front of my family, whatever it happens to be. So those are like, and what's great about those two specific strategies within execution is that no one can prevent you from doing them, right? Even if you work in an organization where people say no fun whatsoever, no one can control how you think. No one can stop you from kind of how you manage some of your own time. And so it's a great place to start because it's something that you completely own.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And I think they both have a very big part of your overall mindset and your feeling of doing some of the things that you got to do and not just getting bogged down all the time or feel like, you know, you're overwhelmed because you have so much work to do. Skipping down to the communication one, mm-hmm. What are a couple effective strategies related to humor that you would say for this one?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things. One, this is where improv really comes into play. Learning the mindset of yes and mm-hmm. is so valuable, right? Because it's how you never run out of things to say in a conversation. If you just keep the yes and mindset in your head, you know, even if someone is like, hey, how about this weather, right? You can use that yes and mindset. You can be like, yes, it's, you know, here in New York City, it's very hot today. It's sticky outside, right? So yes, it's kind of warm and sticky outside. And if you weren't at, say, this networking event, or if you weren't doing this podcast right now, how would you be surviving the heat? Oh, I'd be going to one of the public pools and hanging out, or I'd go to the gym and work out indoors, or I'd stay inside and I would, be watching Netflix and I'm, you know, catching up on Stranger Things season 3 or whatever. You know, whatever it is, it's turning a conversation that was about the weather into hobbies and passions and interests. And so if you're ever in a conversation and you don't know what to say yet next, just yes and whatever the last person said. And so I think that's, you know, that's a mindset. If you want to get better at the conversational humor where it's less about planning things out, yes and taking improv is a fantastic way to kind of build that skill.
Yeah, I mentioned before improv just did so much for me, and I only took it for a few months. It was very short. I want to actually go back to it soon, and I want to actually try the stand-up part of it too. I don't know if I'll get super into that, but I definitely want to attempt it and push myself out of my comfort zone, because that to me is another layer to this whole thing. It's like another step up from improv. You're in front of a bunch of people, you have to say your own things, you don't have the comfort of being around a group of people like in improv. But I mean, they're both great, but I think stand-up is even more impressive to me. But that is something that I learned from improv, was having that spontaneity, the ability to think more on my toes and just come up with things off the top of my head, where before I'd be trying to think of what to say. After I took improv, it seemed to me like things were just coming to me a lot easier, because that's kind of how they condition you when you do improv.
Absolutely. And improv is not about learning how to be funny. Improv is learning about how to react honestly in the moment. So it requires a certain level of presence. And so often, if we are caught up on how do I say the next funny thing in a conversation, you're not fully present. You're missing those things. Whereas if you just practice, and if you start to kind of inhabit that mindset of yes and, which yes and is nothing to do with that, about being a yes man. It's not about being Pollyanna and always positive and all of that. It's simply kind of a mindset to build off of what other people talked about as a way to generate ideas and conversation. And so as you kind of ingrain that in yourself and learn to be present, react honestly, that's how you build, right? And that's really what creativity is. It's learning two skills. One, learning how to trust your instincts, which is a lot of times for people the hardest thing to do, because they're like, oh, that's not funny enough, it's not good enough. They have doubts about kind of what they're going to say. And then two, the second piece is improving those instincts over time. And that's where certainly an improv class can help, because it's a safe environment to practice. But any type of practice can help. I'm a big believer that reflection on the past leads to action in the future. So reviewing your day, reviewing how conversations went. In fact, a lot of times people have this phenomenon where they're like in a conversation or in a moment, and then like 4 hours later, they have this like idea. They're like, oh, I should have said this, yeah. Right? And that's actually a good thing. That's something called staircase wit. It's like the idea where the wit comes later in the stairwell after, you know, the moment has passed. But what that means is that you have comedic ideas, you have comedic instinct. And then through practice and repetition and being more deliberate about it, you have that kind of ha-ha idea happening, you know, from 4 hours later to then it's only happening 3 hours later to then only 2 hours later to then it's happening in the moment, right? And that's where that reflection on the past leads to action in the future, because you've practiced and you're kind of aware of these types of situations. And so, yeah, I think that level of practice, I think stand-up for sure, I'm a huge proponent of it. Anytime someone's like, oh, I kind of thought about stand-up, I'm like, yes, how do I help? Get on stage. Because I think it's the hardest form of public speaking you'll ever do. And so it makes all other forms a lot easier, right? If you can get up on stage in front of, you know, sometimes it's a bunch of people, sometimes it's only like 10. But if you can get up there and kind of, you know, work your way through some of your material, it makes any type of presentation so much easier.
Yeah, 100% does, which is definitely one of the reasons why I want to do it myself and try it out probably in a few months. I get a little more time, but yeah, I am excited for that. And I know just how powerful it can really be. What do you also recommend as far as getting in practice? Like, you know, stand-up comedy obviously is like the ceiling. That's probably the best practice you can get. Do you recommend other forms of it? Because I'm thinking too, when I hang around people that, like I mentioned before, are just funny people, funny dudes that I know, funny friends that I have, it seems to me like the more time I spend with them, the more I'll walk away from the conversation and be funnier. Like I'll sort of adopt some of the mannerisms, some of the forms of how they speak and how they present their jokes and the way they tell stories and just that funny bone that they have. I'll kind of take that away for the next, you know, few days or few weeks. And the more time I spend with them, it seems like the funnier and better communicator I become. Is there another way that you recommend, maybe like watching certain comedians or, you know, being around certain people that you can learn as well from?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's great value to learning through what I would say almost in that way, osmosis, right? Just putting yourself in the environment around. And I think that it can happen kind of unintentionally. You maybe haven't been aware of it in the past, but there's kind of three things that at least that we talk about that are three key tools to effectively use humor, both kind of in the workplace and out of it. And so almost any comedian, particularly a stand-up comedian, first, they have a humor notebook. It's either an actual physical notebook, or it's like Evernote or Apple Notes on your phone or whatever. But they have a repository of where they put anytime they have an idea that's, that's kind of interesting, or, oh, I wonder what that means. You know, they write it down in that notebook. And then that way later, if they want to try to work on material, it's very difficult to sit down and be like, okay, be funny, you know, write something good right now. So instead, often what happens is you know, you can go back to your humor notebook and be like, okay, why did I write this? Like, so for example, I was at a show last night, and someone was saying something runs in the family, and I love puns. So I wrote down like, that's an interesting phrase, like runs in the family. So I'm like, all right, and I haven't built it into a joke yet, but it's probably going to be something along the lines of like, I'm constantly running. Yeah. You know, like jogging runs in the family. Right. Some type of like silly play on words or something, but it's just starting with an idea. So I'm capturing that somewhere. The other benefit to keeping a humor notebook is what is kind of based on, you know, the RAS, the reticular activation system, which if the listeners aren't familiar with, it's this basic kind of concept that says, you know, if you buy a car, or you're more often like a friend buys a certain car, you start to see that car everywhere. Right. And it's not that there's been an increase in production of that particular car. It's just that you've activated that car in what they call your reticular activation system. The brain is processing so much information at this time that there's a lot that we kind of just, you know, take for granted, that we ignore, that we don't need to know. But then as soon as we become aware of something, we start to notice it a little bit more. I think humor is the same way. I notice that when I'm doing stand up, or when I'm more active writing things in my notebook, I start to see more and more that I think is interesting. It starts to, you know, it's not like I'm running out of funny ideas. It's actually generating more. So I think one thing that people can do pretty easily is to start a humor notebook. Start it today of just, you know, what observations do you have? What things made you go, that's interesting? And then later you kind of contest it. So then that's the second thing that all comedians do, is they get quote unquote stage time. So for stand-up comedians, it's literally getting on stage and practicing jokes and seeing where people laugh and where they don't. But we can also get stage time in a lot of different ways as well. We can try jokes or ideas in conversation with our friends. Some people start even kind of a text group of like, hey, I had this kind of interesting idea. What do you guys think? You know, as a way to practice ideas. I use Twitter as a way to share, you know, puns and wordplay, because I love that. And it's maybe not what I'm going to work on, and I may not say it in a speech, but it is a fun way to kind of get it out there. And then if there's a particular tweet or, you know, Facebook post that gets a lot of traction, then that means, oh, okay, maybe people are interested in, let me that, you know, dive a little bit deeper into it. So quote unquote, practicing that skill somehow. You could also take an improv class or do a stand-up comedy workshop, anything that you can do to kind of practice it in some way. Do it as a Facebook group, right? Chat with some friends, start up a small group of people around you. Find some way to practice generating these ideas. And then the third thing that people do is that humor map, is really following that process to be a little bit more deliberate about how you use it. And I think just intentionality will help. Listening, like when you're in a conversation and you make people laugh, just kind of use that as a trigger in your brain to be like, okay, let me think about that a little bit later. Why did people laugh in that situation? What was going on? Or if you find yourself laughing, be like, okay, what happened? What made me laugh? How was I surprised? Or what was the structure? Right? Just being a little bit more intentional about the process can go a long way to helping improve that skill.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love some of these ideas, and I love the ability and the ways that you can actually practice and get this skill, like you mentioned. And honestly, my favorite of all is probably the notebook and having those ideas so you can go back to them. If you need some material, you can obviously go back to your old stories, your old jokes, but also more importantly is having that in mind. And it's literally working the tool like a writer will do as well. Like constantly writing makes you a better writer, even if you're not writing about a specific topic that you like or whatever it is. When you're working that part of your brain, you're constantly improving it and actually growing it. Like science is coming out now and actually showing that different parts of your brain will grow new neurons when you actually train it and practice that thing. So it's the same type of thing here. When you're training yourself to be more funny, or just have that mindset of making things funny that you have observations about, you're going to then apply that to your real conversations and real life communication and actually be more funny. Just wrapping up in a moment, man, I do want to ask you about the connection between leaders and leadership and that of stand-up comedians. What can leaders learn from different stand-up comedians?
Yeah, so I think that there's a lot that they can learn from a purely kind of like slightly more abstract level is understanding kind of influence. Because if you think about comedians, they're fantastic, you know, storytellers and communicators, something that leaders can benefit from. And so one of the things that comedians do is they start strong, right? They, you know, as a comedian, as a stand-up comedian, you have 15, maybe 30 seconds to get people on your side. And so the kind of translation of this to leaders is a concept called head nodding. How do you, when you're first starting, getting people in the kind of audience in the room to kind of nod along and be like, yeah, I agree with that. So rather than if say you need to influence people and convince them to do something differently, rather than starting right out, you know, saying, hey, you guys need to do this differently and do it right away. If you start with like, hey, you know, maybe a little bit of story that someone can kind of relate to, it's kind of funny. And then you can connect to this idea like, hey, you know, there are certain challenges with the way that we've been doing things. They're kind of nodding their head like, yeah, I have experienced those challenges or those stresses. Well, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could fix that? Yep, still nodding my head. Well, here's a potential idea. They've already started nodding that so that they're going to be more inclined, more open to some of these concepts. Right, because you've taken them on this journey. And one important thing that I would say for my fellow engineers out there is some people will hear that and be like, isn't that a lot of work? Wouldn't it just be faster to be like, tell people to do this thing? And one of the things that it took me a while to learn is that there's a difference between being efficient and being effective. And it doesn't matter how efficient you are if you're going in the wrong direction or if you're working on the wrong task. And so when it comes to humans, there's certain things that, yeah, it's maybe not the most efficient thing in the world to do, but it long term will be more effective. You will influence people, you know, kind of a little bit quicker or faster with it. So I think kind of that concept of head nodding is very, very important. And then I think another one from a more conceptual standpoint is the idea of giving credit where credit is due. So like the cardinal sin in stand-up is to steal other people's material, right? And this is a distinction between trying to become a stand-up comedian and using humor in the workplace, right? You can be the shepherd of humor. You don't have to be the creator of humor. You can share things out, but you do want to give proper credit. You don't want to act like, you know, a joke is yours if you didn't write it. But in the workplace, it's okay to kind of share some of those things. As a stand-up comedian, you're not going to take other people's material. And so when it comes from a leader, you know, for me, it doesn't make any sense for leaders who take credit for the work that their people do, because your entire job as a leader is to get the most out of your people. And so if you start taking credit for what they do, you're taking away your own kind of like kind of pat on the back for getting that out of people. Right. So you should be kind of amplifying, oh, wow, look at what this person on our team is doing and how we're amplifying that and doing it even more. Right. That's what a leader should be doing, as opposed to saying, oh, I'm so great, I'm so sweet. So that's kind of another kind of concept from stand up of like, yeah, you know, it, taking other people's material and or kind of credit for the work that they've done is a cardinal sin. And it's ultimately going to, you know, stop you down, like slow you down. Eventually someone will find out and they'll end up hiring the people that were really good, as opposed to the person, you know, lifting that person up.
Yeah, I can think back too of I think Joe Rogan and Carlos Mencina or something like that. They mm-hmm. got into a big beef over Mencina stealing some other comedian's jokes, and Rogan confronted him, and it was like, you know, all over YouTube was a big thing a few years back. It was a pretty interesting video, actually. But yeah, I mean, you're totally right, man. And the point that I really like too is the fact that when you're on stage, you have to control the audience. You are the leader of that entire room. And, you know, whether it's 10 people, whether it's 100 people or 1,000 people, you have complete control of what's happening for the next, you know, 10, 20 hour long session, depending on how long you're up there for stand up. But you really have to be an incredible leader. You have to know what to say, how to say it, when to say it, what tone of voice to use, what pitch to use. All of those things go into the communication that you're delivering to your audience. And you have to know your audience. And a leader has to know their audience too. And they have to know all those types of things to be an effective leader. So yes, there is definitely a ton of crossover there. And I think, again, like I said a few times already, there's so much great things that can be learned from doing stand-up comedy. And I recommend that that some of the guys check it out. At the very least, improv, but stand-up, I think, is a step above that. And Andrew, it's been a fantastic interview, man. I really do appreciate you coming on. What is a last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience, and then a place that our listeners can check out more about your work?
Sure. So the last idea I would leave with, and this was kind of a big moment for me, kind of revelation, is when someone kind of told this to me when I was in the workplace, is that ultimately you are responsible for your own happiness. right? It is not up to your manager. It is not up to your coworkers. It is not up to your family members or, you know, the people that you date or whatever. It's not their responsibility to make sure that you're enjoying what you do. Hopefully they don't detract from it. Hopefully they add to it. But ultimately, you are responsible for it. So if you're in a role that you don't like, or if you are on a project that stresses you out, or if you have a certain task that you have to do that you don't like, you're responsible for it. That doesn't mean that you're always in control of your happiness. It doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't going to be times that you have to do things that you don't like. And I'm not saying, oh, what that means is, you know, quit your jobs and follow your extreme passion. And, you know, if you love what you do, you'll make, you know, never work a day in your life. That I don't believe in. But I do believe a lot in the perspective. There's a lot that you can change and to kind of say, okay, the current situation is I have to do this now. Right? The yes and mentality that we talked about earlier is like, yes, I'm going to do this, and I might as well find ways to make it a little bit more fun or a little bit more enjoyable. And that's a big part of what we're talking about, is start with that levity. Start with, you know, something simple. What we encourage in the kind of the end of the book as well as in our workshops is think one smile per hour. Think, what is one thing that I can do each hour of the day that brings a smile to my face or the face of someone else? And that starts to help you develop that humor habit, right? It creates that, you know, RAS kind of system of activating some of these ideas. You become more present, more aware of it. You start writing in the humor notebook, because ultimately it's a choice, right? How you do your work, how you approach the tasks and the things that you do day to day is a choice that you make. So you might as well choose to make them a little bit more productive, less stressed, more fun. Might as well choose to use a little bit of humor with that.
I love it, man. It's such a great tip. Laughing once every hour, or making somebody else laugh or smile once an hour. Like, that is so easy to do, but it can literally change your life. Andrew, where's a place that our listeners can check out your book and your website?
Sure. If they're interested more in learning about humor, they can go to humorthatworks.com. We have free, you know, blog articles there, and free newsletter. We have the book is there. We have an online course as well. Information about our workshops and some of the things we do can all be found there. If they're interested in directly connecting with me, if they have questions, if they're like, hey, I'm coming to New York City and I want to do stand up, you know, I'm more than happy to chat. And if I'm town, we'll go. Or if they just want puns, right? If they love jokes and wordplay and want to see all that, they can follow me on social media at Drew Tarvin. So DREWTARV as in Victor, IN. And that's, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. Did I miss any? Twitter. I'm still on MySpace somehow. just recently discovered, but it's all at Drew Tarvin. So they can reach out to me and connect with me that way.
All right, guys, make sure you follow him on MySpace.
Yes.
No, Andrew, thanks again for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. And I know our guys are really going to love this one. There's so much great knowledge and information in this episode. So take care, and I'll talk to you soon, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
If you haven't checked out our YouTube channel yet, there's two reasons why. A, you're probably living under a rock and you haven't listened to any other Elite Man podcasts in the past. Or B, you're completely insane and you've just ignored all the messages that I've told you to check them out in the past. Either way, make sure you check it out right now. This is your last chance if you have not checked it out yet. And if it's been a while since you've checked some of our videos out, make sure you go back on and check them out today. I'm telling you, you are going to love some of our new videos. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube. And check them out today. Make sure you like some of the videos if you like them. Comment on some of the videos to leave your feedback, and subscribe to our channel if you have not subscribed yet. And also, if you want to be super helpful and go one step further as an elite man, share some of our videos on your social media with some of your friends. I really do appreciate it personally, and I know my team does as well. We're trying to grow this as much as possible, so spreading that message with some of your friends who can benefit from watching these videos is one of the best things you can do for them and also for us. Again, go to elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube and check our channel out. You are going to love it. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.